Добро пожаловать на новое шоу. Я здесь с небольшой речью. Меня зовут Эвелина Суисайд. Это шоу изменило Америку. Double Feature является андеграундным, поэтому им не приходится бороться с tyrannical government. Это очень важно. Соединенные Штаты находятся под угрозой фашизм, которое привнесло правление нового диктатора. Угрозы racism, corruption, sexual assault очень живы и опасны в настоящее время, но эти двое, Эрик и Майкл, они по-прежнему шутят про pantsuit. Людям необходимо бороться друг за друга и говорить о том, что произошло on November the 8th. В то же время важно, что эти двое прячутся, и хорошо, что они прячутся, потому что sex is demagogue хочет зацензурить все на свете. Есть очень опасное слово, связанное со свиньей. Peg, like, oink oink. Многие Suicide Girls помогают нам, даже девочки из России. Мы не можем позволить людям жить в их alternate reality. Возможно, вы поймете, о чем я говорю. Осторожно, в этом шоу будут spoilers, и этот эпизод is very dirty. Мы начинаем.
Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
So listen, my name's Eric 13, and I have a series of questions for Michael Kester.
Okay.
Which is good, because you're Michael Kester.
That's right, yeah, it's appropriate that I'd be here for this.
So I don't want you to have to think too much about these.
Okay.
We can just do these in rapid succession, because
okay.
I know we got a lot to get to today.
Okay.
The first thing I was going to ask you.
Yep.
If you had to name your favorite Marilyn Manson album.
Ooh, okay. Golden Age of Grotesque is probably the one that jumps to mind, yeah.
Okay.
Not the best, but my favorite. Yeah, that's how I'll put
that.
All
right, that. So you listen to a lot of Manson albums, you would say that is your, that's where you're going to...
Yeah.
If you had to name a slasher franchise that is in the top three goriest, just give me one of them.
Saw.
Final question. What are the two movies we're doing today?
Intolerable Cruelty and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I didn't suspect you'd get any of those questions wrong. I just think they're really fucking funny next to each other.
Right. Yeah.
How do we arrive here?
There's a few methods by which we arrived here. One, the first person I would like to thank for getting us here is the Coen brothers for making Intolerable Cruelty and thusly allowing the rom-com to make another resurgence on Double Feature.
It's true. I don't think it would have happened without that. That's important.
I would also like to thank the fact that we leave a little undecided slot in the annual schedule, which you always think is a great idea, because then I believe your thought process is something along the lines of, to paraphrase, in case I see something good and I want to stick it on the show, which I always think of as, if I wait long enough, he's going to panic and let me put whatever I want.
Yeah. Okay.
And finally,
it's also funny because if I see anything I want to put on the show, I'm only seeing it because we have to do it on the show in about 20 minutes.
Right,
that's
right.
The only reason I believe I see movies.
And the final reason is Matthew McConaughey. Those are the three reasons that I have for
you.
Yeah.
If I had to take a guess on you and one of the movies today, I saw the Matthew McConaughey and I was like, I know what's up with this. I know what's going on here. And then I saw, we'll get into it in the movies. I wanted to tell you about something else because the show's all over the fucking place. Why not go here? We had this Kickstarter. I know you've tried to forget that we have Kickstarters.
I'm continuing to try to forget, yeah.
But if you remember that, that sort of post-traumatic...
I've tried to let that love fern die,
right.
But it keeps coming back.
Right. See, I was going next week, and you're right on the money this week. I wanted to pick maybe one of my favorite sponsored... GL gave to our Kickstarter, right? And we said, okay, well, what do you want us to talk about? We'll talk about something in the opening of the show. That's a Kickstarter thing.
Sure, yeah.
And this, it's so funny. We got a lot more this year that are more like plugs.
Right.
We've been trying to encourage people to do that every year, and they never really seem to.
It's one of the undersung incentives. It's basically buying ad space, right? That's what it should be considered.
I almost said a free ad, but I guess it's not right. A free ad. No. It's a $25 ad. And I want to be very specific, since that's public information, that everything everybody plugged here, from Blumhouse Divided all the way to someone's Vine channel, Everybody on here has some good sponsored content. Oh, to my favorite, which is Fiddler on the Roof. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But today, I need to tell you, because I know you're in the market for this, about the best heat pump in the world.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I don't know anything about this. All I know is it's the best heat pump in the world. And also, I'll give you all the information I have. World capitalized. But that's not all. In the world. The world proper.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless I capitalize that like an idiot. If the listener capitalized it, it was poetry. If I capitalized it, it's because I'm an idiot. I also have, because I know your follow-up question is, what is the URL for this? Well, let me tell you. I'm going to type this in real time because I am curious. I was going to go through this whole thing blind, but I need to know about the best heat pump in the world. It is nrgteq.nl. I don't even know what that extension is. .nl?
Netherlands, maybe?
That's what I was going to say, but if it's not the Netherlands, I'd also look stupid, so I was covering myself there.
Read that out to me one more time.
Are you going to do this too? Can everyone do this synchronized?
NRG.
NRG.
Yeah.
TEQ.
TEQ.
.NL.
.NL. All right.
And I'm hitting return. Everybody hit return.
Pause. Here we go.
Go to it.
Huh. That didn't work for me.
NRGTEQ.NL. What do you mean it didn't work for you? Do you have the internet open? How are we talking right now?
I don't know. It just didn't fly.
Well, you know what's in front of me is the best heat pump in the world. And there is something really...
Oh, it worked that time. That's funny.
See, there you go.
There it is. It looks like a good heat pump.
That guy looks happy with the heat pump. And there's install it tours on here.
Oh, check out the bottom. Heat Pump City of the Year Award 2016.
Oh, yeah. The only English phrase on this page. All right. I encourage everyone... to go to this. This got even funnier now that I'm looking at this website.
All right.
If this isn't funny enough to you yet, please go to this website. And I guess if you need a heat pump, I don't even really know what a heat pump does. I mean, I guess in theory I do. Whatever, this doesn't matter. Go to nrgteq.nl. Let us know if you got a heat pump from there, I guess. And thanks to GL for... putting this in a very unlikely place. We have spoilers. 24 minutes in, we're going to be talking about...
McConaughey and Kate Hudson's cinematic on-screen, off-screen romance and whether or not the chemistry exudes the screen.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. You know, you guys cover too many horror movies on this show. What is this, like a horror podcast? I wonder if Blumhouse Divided has covered any of these. But first, we're doing Intolerable Cruelty.
Going into Intolerable Cruelty, this is important for me to come out at the onset. I have recently, not only have I recently come around on the Coens, we've talked about this recently, but I've come around not only on the Coens as, hey, maybe everything they've done is pretty good. You know, I came around to
it
that.
It only took you 25 movies.
I know,
so.
Right? But instead, I went back and rewatched every single one of their films, every single one. And I think they're all amazing, but... and this is an unpopular opinion, this one I think is my favorite.
Wow, really?
I know.
Not only is that an unpopular opinion, it's an opinion only shared by two people and probably only this week on Double Feature. No, I think that's amazing. This is actually the movie that people just skip every time they go through name every Coen movie. Mm-hmm. This is the one, if you want to beat everybody in trivia, it's the one everybody fucking forgets.
There's kind of a three-way tie, and we're doing the other one in my tie later this year on the show, and then we already covered the Hudsucker Proxy.
For kids.
But this one really...
The Hudsucker Proxy for kids. Please.
This one really... I think because of where it comes in and the climate of this film, the fact that the Coen brothers, and this is kind of the point of the show, I think, my theme putting these two movies together is essentially, are you ready for the pomp?
Yeah. There was already been one pump on the show, so I don't know.
The pump. Pump, not the pump.
Oh, pump.
Pump.
Yeah, I was like, we already covered this.
The cinematic...
It's the greatest heat pump in the world. I don't know if you knew
the
that.
The cinematic legitimacy of the rom-com.
Oh, sure, sure.
That's where we are today. That's what this movie allows for. I love that the Coen brothers, late in their career too, this is not, you know, they're not dabbling anymore. This is...
Right, right.
Joel and Ethan Coen of insert films fame.
Yeah. Right.
And they see the rom-com as this genre of cinematic import and decide, why don't we do one of those?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we do it in a way that, you know, transcends kind of the schlocky, pulpy date movie and turns this genre, how do we get to the core of this and turn this into something enduring that matters and lasts and is smart and funny?
Right.
And I think they do it two ways. One is obviously using George Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's easy. George Clooney's a shoo-in. It's not fair. They have this unbelievably gorgeous, charming man basically on speed dial at the time.
Uh-huh.
And they go, we want to do a movie that everybody's kind of just charmed by. Ooh, let's get George in here. All they really have to do is have him, you know, keep checking his teeth in the mirror and smiling, and everyone will be endeared to the film.
Do you think, not to derail you here, but I'm curious, do you think there's anyone else in the entire cinematic world you can think of who could pull off the combination of smug, confident, likable lawyer?
I really don't. I think this is...
I mean, it's
kind of just him. Yeah.
I can't believe how, as I was writing out notes and looking at this character kind of on paper, I'm like, this is the most ridiculous, awful human on the planet,
right,
next to maybe the other star of this film.
Right.
And I don't think I even realized that till it was over because of George Clooney.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too, this movie, the reason I like this movie is that it takes the rom-com genre and elevates it to a point where it's giving the audience credit for actually being wise, intelligent humans.
Mm-hmm.
Standard rom-coms, and we'll see this a little bit in the second part of today's show, tend to just go, you know, people are going to, the movie itself doesn't matter. What's going on doesn't matter. This is a date movie. This just needs to feel warm and you just want to cuddle during it. But this movie takes the fact that this movie is based all around prenuptial agreements and then kind of in a noir sense,
yeah,
where it's about minds basically trying to one-up each other on who's better at the prenup. I think the moment that the movie really lets you know what it's doing is when Billy Bob Thornton eats the prenup, but that also lets you know how great of a movie you're watching.
Right.
Usually that's a bar for me. There's definitely a bar when I'm watching films. I go, this is good, but is it
bar.
But is it Billy Bob Thornton eats a prenup good?
Right. When you mentioned film noir, Double Indemnity is the first thing that comes
to
mind.
Yeah.
You know, we covered Double Indemnity. It didn't seem that weird on our show. But I do think this, I mean, that's why I poke fun at it. I think this double feature is going to show up in people's iTunes and they're going to go, huh, that's interesting. And I don't know that Intolerable Cruelty, even just to look at it for face value outside of its artistic merit, which is the big surprising part about it for me, is how much is it really different from something like Double Indemnity?
Right.
I mean, at the time, Double Indemnity had to be a bit of a date movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It
sure
looks like murder intrigue film study now, but maybe that's how Intolerable Cruelty will look 50 years from now.
I just don't feel like this movie, I feel like people are so unwilling when it comes to this film to really look at it as a Coen brothers movie. I think they forget that it has all the same elements.
How could you forget?
Well, I think people, they look at the cover and they go, isn't that America's Sweethearts? You go, no.
Oh, right, right.
I feel like, because the movie itself screams Coen the whole time, down to Wheezy Joe and that kind of hijinks at the end. It just feels so, I mean, to me, it just feels like essentially, obviously not literally, but it's like Miller's Crossing with a laugh track by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
it's these two warring factions and one is out to kill the other. And you're kind of going, oh man, who's going to kill? Oh no, nobody should kill anyone. You know, it's, you're so tied up. It feels, I mean, it feels right in line with Burn After Reading or Raising Arizona.
It does. It does. And I think the, you know, the sort of packaging on it is what makes it so strange, because if you were to watch this in a Coen lineup with those other movies, I'm not sure it's going to stand out as, you know, abnormal in any way.
It won't stand out more than The Lady Killers does. That's for damn sure.
Right. I know. But again, if you ask people to name Coen movies and someone brings up Intolerable Cruelty, they're going to go, oh yeah, they did. That was weird, wasn't it? They did do that movie. But I don't think it stands out that much outside of, you know, the overtly romantic elements.
And it's not that romantic of a movie.
No, it's really not.
It's not.
No. No, it's kind of evil in that sense. It's kind of pure evil in that sense. I actually think I was going to try and compare it to another romantic Coen movie, but I think there's something that is more romantic about really any Coen movie. I think
totally.
Because there's more endearment there.
Right.
If that's a word.
It is. There are terms of it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. This movie really is such a dark version of this love story. It's so windy and twisty the way that these two people end up. They're essentially just constantly encounter each other at their worst.
Yeah.
You know, she first encounters him. He's trying to rob her of money that she probably has earned. I feel like that husband is the only one she's not widowing to.
Yeah.
I mean, of course she is, but I feel like at the pace of the film, that's the first time that happens when they call in, I wish I could remember his whole name. The Baron Von.
Oh, yeah, right. Baron Von.
Yeah.
That's fine. Wasn't there a Baron Von that used to listen to our show?
Yeah, there's a Baron Von.
Victor, right?
Yes.
I think it was Victor. Yeah, let's just call him Victor then. That's fine.
But the whole thing before that moment when he basically gets Richie Rich's dad off scot-free without having to pay her feels like she's being cheated at that point. Even though
the
court hearing from all the court I've never been to seems really kind of like that was right. It was the right call, but it really feels like a personal robbery of her character.
Sure.
And so when she comes in with Billy Bob Thornton and he's just so glossy eyed and love struck, then you see her be the worst. Because Billy Bob Thornton, if you want to talk about endearing, Billy Bob Thornton's character, Doyle, is the most simple, and he's just bubbling over with this affection, which we later find out he's faking, but that's why it's so pure in that moment, is because he's just faking it, and that's how you really love a person, is you fake it. That's how that works.
Well, I mean, once you find that out, there's so much fucking intrigue in this movie,
right?
You know, it's always hitting you with
it's so twisted. There's so many layers.
Well, you know that she is trying to do something with him. You know she's pulling something, she's up to something. Obviously the characters know that, but you can't put your finger on what it is. And they emphasize over and over how impossible this contract is to get out of. So you're going, well, there's just no fucking way to get out of it. I mean, where is this possibly going? That is actually a level of intrigue that I think is gripping in a plot sense.
Yeah.
That you're actually thinking, how are they going to get out of this one? That's basically the classic cinema question.
Yeah.
And that's when you get that, added layer of soap opera actor.
Mm-hmm.
Once you see that reveal on the TV, I feel like, I don't know, my mind spun at it the first time I saw it.
Right.
And then watching it again for the show, knowing the whole way through it, that, did I just acknowledge that I've seen Intolerable Cruelty before? Going back through it, knowing that he's an actor, gives a totally different take on those scenes, which is just magnificent. Because you're looking at her the first time going, what a fucking actor. Look at her. Just faking this
totally
whole thing.
Totally con. What a con.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. And then, you know, to see him, I mean, it looks like Billy Bob Thornton hamming it up, but it's Billy Bob Thornton seriously playing an actor hamming it up.
Right.
Which is fucking hilarious to me. I also think while we're on Billy Bob Thornton, I probably can't even name him in a memorable performance outside of all of the Coen movies in which he is one of the most memorable characters.
Sure.
In.
Sure. And the TV show, don't forget.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the thing that turned me around on this movie was seeing Fargo, in which he's probably in a show that's just full of amazing characters, just fucking packed with them. Even the tiny, you know, two episode arc characters, the grocery store baron, like everybody in that show who's just around for a little while. His character is gotta be my favorite. And I remember after watching the Fargo TV show, the first season, having this obsession of like, I want to know about his band, and he gives these weird fucking interviews. And thinking about it now, I was going to cite these other great Billy Bob Thornton roles, but they're all in Coen movies.
Yeah. And Sling Blade.
Even Bad Santa is, you know, produced by the Coens. And I think looking at Intolerable Cruelty after seeing Coen ideas spread out so much in Fargo, something about that made me enjoy it a lot more. I don't really know what it is. Maybe it's the sense of comedic, because you're, so Fargo is what, 20 episodes or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And throughout it, although it's not exclusively the Coens working on it, it's a lot more distant from them. It does include a lot of references and a lot of specific, it tries to really feel Coen, I think.
Oh, totally. I think it tries to feel more Coen-y than anything the Coens do, because it has to, because it's not them.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's why it instills so much of their property in it. And when I watch Intolerable Cruelty, it's not hard to imagine that as taking place in that kind of world. And so looking for how these character arcs are going to move around, or how the story's going to move, or understanding their sense of humor a little bit more from spending so much time in it.
Right.
I think that series, for any Coen fan, not to talk about it too much, but it's really instrumental in, you know, if you spend a little time around an oddity, you're not going to understand it nearly as much as if you spend a month with it. And after doing that and then coming back to something like Intolerable Cruelty, I feel like I'm understanding it on this level that I just wasn't getting the first time around.
It definitely, Intolerable Cruelty definitely feels like a Coen Brothers movie for Coen Brothers fans. It's kind of like a little treat for those of us who love everything they've done. Then they kind of make this movie that goes, yeah, this is a great movie, but if you're into us, you're going to love this movie. And that's kind of what I was saying about, as a romantic comedy, this transcends the normal schlock.
I love hearing you use like horror terminology. To, no one would ever associate.
It's just you, for me, I see rom-coms as, as I take them for what they are, which is a version of exploitation. On average, these movies are not made for much artistic integrity. That's not what, nobody's telling a story that they just need to get out.
Yeah.
When they're making a movie like, hold on, let me wait. 2-1 How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Well done.
But,
aces.
What is still going on with this movie and the last movie is I feel like with the last movie, I feel like somebody is taking, seeing the genre and going, this is something that can be a movie with, you know, a message, with themes, with ideas. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, on the other hand, I feel like is essentially the poster-typical, perfect, quintessential rom-com.
Did you say poster-typical?
Poster-typical. Poster-type. Poster-typical.
That is hashtag poster-typical.
Terms of poster-typicality.
Right. Well, it's funny watching this back to back with Intolerable Cruelty, because that's another thing that I think draws out a lot of the Coen of the first movie.
Totally.
Is you see, you know,
you have a romantic, reference to eliminate,
romantic comedies yeah. have a kind of stock lighting and a mm-hmm. stock. You don't want to deviate from it too much, because it stops having mass appeal
mm-hmm.
and it stops feeling like it's part of that
right.
genre.
And stock score. Let's not forget how
sure.
canned
sure.
the score is.
So when you watch the last movie and, you know, the way it's lit and the kind of expert competency in terms of things that are artistic, applying that to, it's like glamour looks, it's like high art, mm-hmm. you know, it's like not terribly unlike a fashion magazine, I guess, in that you have the best of the best people doing this. And then maybe fittingly, we're pairing it with this movie about a fucking fashion magazine mm-hmm. or a Cosmo, essentially.
Right.
And this fucking movie has a scene, a chase scene
on
in soft focus on a bridge.
Yep.
with a cliche montage and, you know, an overlay of music that's way too on the nose for what's happening in the
I
scene.
I love it. I love it.
I'd never seen a chase scene in soft yeah. focus. Yeah. It's the funniest fucking thing.
So we were talking about George Clooney as a charming, you know, individual. And there's something, I think, to reflect Matthew McConaughey's character off of what George Clooney does, as well as Kate Hudson off of what Catherine Zeta-Jones does. Because I think that when you're looking at, and this is going to be kind of an interesting thought experiment, but when you look at the two movies, I would argue very strongly that that while How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and I hope it comes across how much I fucking love this movie, because I'm about to say things that are going to sound mean, but I mean them with full adoration.
It's on double feature,
right.
So I think we know at this point.
But How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is one of the more shallow movies we've ever covered on double feature.
Sorry, I'm mentally going through. I noticed we both yeah. paused here to go, what other shallow movies have been on? Oh, Bedazzled, was my fault.
Right.
There we go.
But I would argue that the two romantic interests in Intolerable Cruelty are more shallow than the two characters in this movie.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you have to, this movie plays on that thing, and it's a thing that it doesn't just exist in romantic comedies. It doesn't just exist in film. It exists in all media. And it's this thing that's been cropping up over forever, where when you're making this movie, so you talked about how this has to have mass appeal, the idea of lowest common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew McConaughey's character has to be appealing to every woman in the theater, not threaten the other dudes, but be a dude the guys can root for.
Uh-huh.
Kate Hudson's character has to be attractive to every guy in the theater, but not be the kind of girl that the other girls are threatened by and they're rooting for.
Is the answer to all this sports? Because I feel like...
Well, my point is, when you look at this movie, to dial back, I think Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson nail these characters. Mm-hmm. They're both horrible,
mm-hmm.
but you kind of like them anyway. And it's funny because the very nature of the film is that each character gets what's coming to them at the same rate that they're dishing out
sure.
to the other character. That's the nature of the stupid dynamic here.
Well, it's so much an inverse and at the same time a perfect, it almost seems too comparable to the plot of Intolerable Cruelty.
Right.
And then you also look at the characters of that movie being so shallow in a fucking high art Coen movie, and then a movie that looks really shallow that has these strangely deep and just odd
emotional moments.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I think that when I say that How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is this perfect rom-com, it's because I feel like it nails that exact mass appeal, lowest common denominator move. I feel like it in every step of the way. The plot is stupid, but it's kind of compelling. I kind of want to see where this goes.
Right.
I want to see how this plays.
Well, it's a competition again, like the last
movie. The moment Kate Hudson walks into the bar and the two diamond women are going, but we get to pick the girl. You go, oh shit, here comes the movie, you know?
Yeah, it's the Avengers coming together.
It's so, right. I mean, and then it's basically just like sexual Home Alone. That's something, that's a movie. Dibs, I call
Hashtag it. Sexual Home Alone. I think that's probably already a movie, right, Sexual Home Alone.
But Sexual Home Alone in that it's basically these two people setting romantic traps for each other. Right?
You know what that is? It's a fucking Suicide Girl set.
Right?
That's what Sexual Home Alone would be. Yeah. So I'm going to steal that from you and take that. Because I was just thinking, we have this model contingent, I'm going to call it the Neon Demon contingent of our listenership. Uh-huh. And I was just thinking, oh, I wonder if anyone's been in anything like Sexual Home Alone. Wait a second. That's a kitschy photo shoot idea with traps and stuff. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, what were you saying?
Well, so I'm just saying they set these romantic traps for each other. One is trying to, you know, court the other heavy, and the other one is trying to drive the other one away. Mm-hmm. And so the dynamic you get is you kind of feel bad for both parties and you can't hate them even though they're kind of being terrible.
Yeah, right.
Because
they're also falling for each other.
Exactly. Right? And they play that so well.
And you don't suspect it like you do. It's not suspect.
Right.
It's oh, this is actually happening. Is it going to happen at the rate that it needs to for both parties? Right.
I mean, I think the real question is this going to happen before they try to come up with a string of rhymes to You're So Vain?
Oh my God.
In front of a group of people.
That scene is every second of cringeworthy that it promises to be.
It's so bad.
The audience reactions on that required zero acting, I believe. Mm-hmm. As long as they were there live to see it.
Here's something everybody should pause the show and do really quick. There's a video montage on the internet of Matthew McConaughey just making sounds, and a vast majority of them come from this film.
Excellent.
But anyway,
please remind me to link to that.
So that's one of the, that's why I love this movie is my point, is that I'm glad that we got this on here with Intolerable Cruelty, because Intolerable Cruelty kind of goes, what if we elevate the genre, right? That's what they're saying. What if we elevate this genre? Whereas How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days offers the opposite of, what if instead of playing jazz on the rules, we do a perfect performance of this piece?
Well, and I think when we talked about They Came Together,
right,
we did that.
I knew that was going to come up on the show. It has to.
You know, I was thinking about it during the movie, because since we did that, I've gotten to see a little more behind the scenes on sets of a lot of these kind of stock romantic comedies. And something really funny about it is, you know, you were totally right. People aren't doing this going, this is my romantic comedy masterpiece.
Right.
Everyone is doing it going, I'm working on a cheesy
Hallmark Channel.
Yeah. Fucking Hallmark Channel.
Yeah.
I think about 10 of these things are Hallmark movies. But you can't avoid, I mean, there's something to look for in these romantic comedies. And I think this will, even if you find the genre insufferable, this is one of those things that once you point it out, you could spend, it's like learning 3-point lighting or something. You could watch any movie and just go, okay, where are the lights in this scene? Where are the lights in this scene? You could watch anything and occupy yourself. And that is that behind the scenes on these movies, because people know they're working on something of this nature, it becomes self-satirical to the artists working there. So every movie has some degree of They Came Together. Mm-hmm. There is some level of the actors knowing they're doing a cheesy romantic comedy and doing it on a weird kind of ironic meta level and trying to spot the places in the movie where that's going on and by whose hand is really fucking amusing. Especially this movie, which the two insane things about it to me are how improvised it is, and also the the insane amount of budget that went to jewelry rentals.
Right.
It has some like world record for that's most funny. Expensive jewelry. I did not jewelry. Know that. Yeah, isn't that nuts?
I mean, you have to frost yourself. So
use fucking props. What are you, right?
It had to be legit.
Well, and the whole time I'm watching this, I'm going, I don't believe that this has to be some kind of rumor or something, because this, I wouldn't know the difference between a sparkly light on fake jewelry mm-hmm. and an $18 million, whatever the fuck. But to go back to the improvisational thing, I think a movie that plays really loose like this, where a lot of the little gag things are kind of just stuff they're screwing around with on the set, you can look for a lot of those moments and see them kind of really, you could look at it as a less, it's funny I used on the nose earlier, but a less on the nose they came together.
Mm-hmm.
They came together that doesn't go, you know how in romantic comedy movies, this would totally be the scene right. where this happens. It's kind of doing that in pieces just in who's making it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a funny thing to me.
Another really weird archetype that I think is probably worth digging into is, I say sexuality, but I mean in terms of gender in this movie.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So, you know, this movie was made long enough ago that dudes liked sports and girls liked jewelry and to cry.
Oh, right. You know right, what I mean? Right. I know what you mean.
That's one of the things that I think is becoming increasingly difficult in the romantic comedy genre, is you can't mm-hmm. have hot six-pack sports dude and his less hot but funnier friends one corner. And then...
I'm sorry, you mean the cast of Dazed and Confused growing right, up at their sports right. job?
Yeah. And then... really hot, you know, makeup type, you know, either works in right, cosmetics right. or works for a magazine, really hot yeah. girl. And then her catty, but supportive friends.
Yeah.
But, here we are 10 years later. And if you tried to make How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days again, it would be offensive in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it certainly would.
Which is interesting because looking back at this movie, I don't see it and go, ooh, that's...
No, you know, no, you're right. It has no...
Gender blackface or whatever you right, fucking
right,
call
right,
it.
Right, right, right. Totally.
But
outside of the You're So Vain sequence, which just I'm sure was as cringeworthy at the time,
right.
There is...
It somehow dodged the offensive right. sexuality conversation that it should be subject to 12 years later.
Well, these sort of... fake pop model gender roles.
Right.
These kind of, I don't think the people seeing this were catty makeup women and mindless ab dudes.
Right.
I think that, you know, this is a little bit of popular culture showing people these weird models and kind of going, you know, this is the archetype of a star thing to look up to.
Mm-hmm.
Movies are still, they're not representative of reality, I guess is what I'm, sure, what I'm trying sure. to get to. Where I think today, you and I were talking earlier a bit about Tim Burton catching a bunch of crap for right. having exclusively white people in all his movies.
Right, which as soon as you said that, I went, ooh, that's... True.
Yeah, but also didn't bother anyone for 35 right. fucking years. Yeah. You know what I mean? Today we...
With the exception of Mars Attacks.
Well...
Mars Attacks turns out to be once again the outlier in Tim Burton's career.
Yeah, right, right. And I think that that's representative of people wanting movies to look more like reality.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that comes a little bit out of, I think there's a fair part of it. And I think there's a part of it that comes out of the politically correct culture. That's kind of going, you know, we need to show the world how
you
to
mean
be.
Our PC principles.
Our PC principles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, Burton's argument at the time was basically.
It was the suburbs. That'd be my argument.
Right. I didn't know Cedric the Entertainer.
Right.
That's, I think.
Yeah.
If he would have just called me, I would have put him in the movie. I don't know what you're talking yeah. about. But he talked about the sort of 90s cartoon tokenism of guy in a wheelchair, one black guy. And actually, those are the only two cliches I can ever think of from that generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see where, you know, he basically just thought, well, the stories don't necessarily always call for, let's say, a politically diverse cast. What if it is a story about some weird white people who wear clown makeup? I assume is the implied
right.
end of every Tim Burton sentence.
Also, black goths, like that would have been difficult.
That is a weird thing.
It's a thing. It's totally a thing. I just feel like it would have been difficult to Burtonize.
Well, so when you look back on this movie, the other thing that's funny to me in the representation of reality is one of the little nod wink kind of things I think they're doing is creating a kind of criticism of Cosmo while also being Cosmo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way they are, that's actually a perfect kind of metaphor for what I was talking about earlier. The way that they're talking about this magazine and also at the same time going, and isn't this magazine kind of stupid? But didn't you want to see this movie to find out how to lose a guy in 10 days?
Right.
But also, isn't that a stupid thing to,
and
the way everyone buys that at the checkout line at the grocery store.
Sure.
And goes, this is stupid. I'll buy one.
This is pulp. This is garbage.
I can't believe this trash. Give me two of those. But the thing she aspires to do, this is the fucking funniest part about watching this movie today. She aspires to write some sort of political commentary.
Sure.
And
whereas Matthew McConaughey's character aspires to be a dude who sells diamonds. So that's his,
That's his
going outside his comfort zone.
Yeah.
I'm a man, but I can sell diamonds. All right.
Yeah. That's pretty good. You just need a cowboy hat. You need to borrow Billy Bob Thornton's cowboy hat. The thing that's funny about it to me is that there's a sort of irony that our political journalism today looks a lot more like a Cosmo column than a Cosmo column did back then.
Yeah.
You know, the way that it is the 10 most offensive things that this politician said, or the sort of clickbaity, very shallow, unaware of the world outside the bubble thing that has happened once journalism got once blogs could write, and that either let everyone have a voice or made TV news stupider. I'm not really sure which that did, but it's funny when you said the things that wouldn't work today. That's what my mind immediately went to, that the entire notion of I want to move from Cosmo to, you know, Huffington Post
right.
is a totally viable career path today.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
But yeah, I feel like that's what I love about this movie is I feel like it was a mistake in that regard. I feel like there's no way they sat down at the table and went, all right, this is a movie called How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. It will stand the test of time as the most effective and quintessential romantic comedy ever made in the era of romantic comedies. And it will never accidentally become offensive.
Right.
Even when hailstorm of the spectrum of gender comes headfirst into the room.
Even the notion today of trying to do romantic comedy seems
complicated. What I mean. Yeah.
If there wasn't an established template, that's not something that would just organically grow
out of
nowhere.
It feels dangerous. It feels way more like in today's cinematic climate, you have to approach romantic comedies the way that the Coens did with Intolerable Cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
Or to that point, They Came Together. It's the idea of, so we know this is a thing, but we also know that you can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's generally accepted that you can't do this anymore, basically.
Right.
So we have to expand it. We have to grow on it. We have to elevate it. Whereas with How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, they did it so well that it hits every note, except for, you know, You're So Vain. It hits every other note.
Which hits no notes, I believe.
And like you said, it still resonates enough that it kind of makes you feel, you get the warm fuzzies. You get it. It's effective in a really kind of embarrassing way. So that's why I come to this movie so proudly, because that way I don't have to feel embarrassed about it.
there's a kind of nostalgic, oversimplistic thing about it. A time when movies were very simple and mm-hmm. didn't need to represent complicated reality. And we could just go to them and, you know, I don't
it's
know.
True. There is a level of escapism.
You know,
under the Vaseline on the lens, there's another layer of escapism.
Well, now we're all the dude in Sleepless in Seattle who's getting angry at people talking. That's basically the real audience surrogate for today's audience in this. I'm trying to study this movie.
Right.
Get out of here. I got to write a review on Rotten Tomatoes after this.
Yeah. On Yelp about this theater.
Yeah. But it's amazing to show that it still has these, it's still aware enough to kind of make jokes out of how absurd. When she finally writes this column and gets her choice to do anything in the world,
mm-hmm. She picks Top Gun.
The jokes about a breeze.
Yeah.
I forget exactly what it is, but her boss is basically like, no.
Well, the wind won't blow you there.
right. It's more like a gentle breeze. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's going, oh, I can cover this topic.
Wherever the wind
topic.
May take you. Yeah.
Right.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Because it would have been insanely absurd that she unlocks the ability to change the entirety of what this magazine is about mm-hmm. by simply writing a column that she's supposed to kind of, that's her job anyways. And so for them to show up at the end, that's the most self-satirical kind of element of this, is for them to stand there and sort of look at you and go, I'm sorry, you didn't actually, we're all playing pretend here. You know that, right? We're not actually going to start covering world hunger or anything. This is, yeah. Okay. Movie's over, kids. Go home. Website is over. Double feature episode is over. The website is doublefeature.fm. Took me a minute to remember that. But really, all you need to do today is go to nrgteq.nl. I didn't have to plug that twice, but I felt like it because it's really funny. I want to thank Seth Hanasek, Liam Duffy, Christopher Peterson, Jeremy Mumenthal, Athena Banks, Tom Comey, Jill Moriarty, Eric Tachek, and Charles Crawford.
For all of you, take a moment to just frost yourselves. Frost your pants, frost every part of you.
Is that in case I cut the other frost yourself out of the show? Is that what that is? What are we doing next time on the show?
Next time on the show, we are going to get back into the journey, which means we're going to talk more war and more drugs. That's right. Two people who have never been to war and never done drugs are going to talk about heavy war and heavy drug usage.
I'm sorry, what did we cover on this episode again?
Today we covered Intolerable Cruelty and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Uh-huh, yeah. And what are the episodes next time?
Movies
next time.
Platoon and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Because why the fuck not?
So I guess that means watch more fuck.
Frost yourselves.
Это был эпизод шоу Double Feature. Вы прослушали фильмы, которые вам следует посмотреть, и список наших продюсеров. Если же вы хотите увидеть что-то более сексуальное и naked, вы можете найти меня. Мое имя Айвелина Suicide. Вы можете увидеть мои фотографии на suicidegirls.com. И у меня также есть a link on this episode's page на веб-сайте show Double Feature. Also, I have Twitch and Instagram, both Poison Айвелина. Живи, процветай, революция. Watch more fucking film.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.